It is Sunday, which means it's time for another Enlighten Me with Rachel Martin. Hey, Rachel.
Hi, Scott. Okay, so what I'm about to do, I understand, is a little bit risky. I'm going to do it anyway.
Okay.
I am going to say a few words, and then I want you to tell me what they all have in common.
Okay, let's do it.
Psychedelics, church revivals, giving birth.
The first and third would, I feel like drugs would be a common theme.
Psychedelics and giving birth. Absolutely. Yes. Yes. For many, many people, drugs are a part of giving birth because otherwise it really.
Intensity.
Really hurts.
Intensity.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Intensity. I think that's, I mean, that is true. And it dovetails with the word that I'm going to use now, which is ecstatic.
All right. I could see that. And that makes a lot more sense than my first answer. But in what sense of the word ecstatic are we talking about here?
Right. Okay. So this, the root of this is ecstasy, right? But that can mean a lot of different things. But we are talking about the kind of ecstasy that Merriam-Webster defines as a sense of overwhelming emotion or even a mystic trance is how they say it. And this is something that Gia Tolentino has thought a lot about. She's a staff writer for The New Yorker. And I wanted to talk to her for this series. She is a really interesting thinker, and she's got a very nuanced take on her own religious upbringing. She grew up going to an evangelical megachurch outside of Houston, and she is all about ecstasy, like in the literal and figurative ways.
Okay.
So she found—
the proper noun of it.
Right, exactly. She found ecstatic experiences very readily going to church in a religious context. And then she found them in illicit drugs. And now she finds that overwhelming sense of joy and transcendence and, yes, ecstasy coming from a far more personal place. You just had a baby, right? How many months ago now?
She's 9 weeks old.
Oh, we're not even in the months of chronicling a life. We're
tiny.
In the weeks.
Yeah. She's tiny. Aww. But my partner's taking the whole year off to take care of her. So
this is Gia Tolentino's second child. She and her partner also have a daughter who's 3. So life is as full and as messy as you'd expect. But this whole procreating thing wasn't a foregone conclusion for Gia.
I'm still like very theoretically ambivalent on the decision to have children, you know? But I'm so glad now. I'm really glad.
Why? What's good about it? I know that seems obvious. And like parents are hearing that and like, how could you ask such a thing? You know, having children is like this amazing experience. And it is, but I don't know. What specifically?
I think I was hungry for ego death in general. And I have sought experiences of ego death in various capacities in my life. You know, like I wrote about in drugs and in, you know, certain experiences of music and art and... but really mostly in drugs. And
explain what that means to you, ego death.
I think I just realized at some point, you know, so I grew up extremely religious. And I think that one of the things that I was, that kept me religious for so long was the experience of sublimating the ego to a sense of the divine. And, you know, you would get it occasionally in prayer. You would get it. I would get it often in this giant, giant church that I was raised in. This was the kind of church where the pastor's face is on billboards throughout the highway and the sermons are broadcast on TV every Sunday. And the worship center, as it was called, was 3 stories high and sat, I think, 5,000 to 6,000 people. I think it had the largest pipe organ in the state of Texas.
Wow, that's saying something.
I would go on these Christian retreats every summer in high school, and there were just these mass baptisms. Like
in a lake? Like the whole...
I honestly think sometimes it was in a swimming pool in this big resort in the Gulf Shores, Alabama. You know, it was these kind of big revivals that were just full of hormonal teenagers, like getting extremely swayed by one thing or another and feeling the deep need to accept Christ. And I did it all.
But were you wanted to lean into those transcendental moments even as a child?
Yeah, because it is an access point. I mean, I just realized I felt most like some particular version of myself that I liked accessing when I could feel the boundaries of myself dissolving and I could feel myself as part of this like nebulous collective. And that always came with some sort of access point to mystery and some sort of access point to fear, and but also like love and connection, right? And you get that in church. You get that with this backdrop of salvation and damnation and like pouring out your love to God and God pouring out love back to you and supplication, all these things. And as I stopped believing in God, and stopped certainly believing in any sort of idea of God that was taught to me, you know, that's recognizable within a Christian framework, I started to seek that experience of the boundaries of the self dissolving in drugs and in music and just lots of dark rooms where people kind of felt the boundaries of the self go away. It felt good for me whenever I would have those experiences of ego death or ego dissolution.
Accessing those parts of your consciousness through drugs, through those kinds of experiences, did that fill the void that leaving religion had left?
The thing is, I don't think there was a void. And that was one thing that I was suspicious about. You know, I was like, Gia, you really rationalized this all a little too cleanly. You know, you were like, oh, I found sources in other things. I found sources of God in other things. And it struck me that although going back and rereading my journals, it was not quite as smooth with a transition as I thought it was. Like I did have a year or two where I was really kind of turgid with thoughts about, you know, what does it mean that I like am maybe not a Christian anymore? But it felt like there had not been a void left. I felt enough access in my life to spaces of transcendence and to submission and to like ethical inquiry, you know, these things that I was, that I wanted and still want and learned through religion. I've never found a shortage of paths towards those things. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes I think about, my parents are still religious, and sometimes I think about the comfort that, you know, that real religious faith gives people, you know, this real trust in a divine will. Mm-hmm. And the comfort of that I don't have whatsoever, but I think maybe that was a reason that I drifted this way. Like, I don't want that comfort. Right. I think it has been better for me to have no trust in a plan or, mm-hmm. or a path or anything. Like, I think I'm better off operating as if this and the absence of supervision is all that we have.
Mm-hmm. Because it puts the onus on you and that is okay. More than okay.
And I think bracing and enlivening and kind of, and it feels scarier in a good way.
Yeah. How does that jibe with your efforts to dissolve your ego? I wrestle with this myself. So if there is nothing and it's us, right, and we have all the agency and we create the meaning and we divine the sacred spaces because we just decide that they are.
Yeah.
That feels like building up the ego, not sublimating it.
I think, I mean, in some aspects it does. In some aspects, building your own, well, it's never really building your own, like finding your own tradition of ethics or, you know, or action or whatever. To some extent, sure, it feels like in that you are constructing a sort of self-based universe of all of these. But I still feel like the actual experiences of those things, they're still cracking at the ego. You know, I mean, the most, like I'm thinking about, you know, my experiences, let's say of the last, so I had my first kid in August 2020. So the experiences of that ego dissolution, they've happened so often in these experiences with my child, you know, mm-hmm. when they happened in birth itself, this incredibly shocking event where you are nothing but a vessel. Right. And it's this shocking moment of revelation and this kind of the twinning of life and death and the, like that felt divine in like the real way, like bloody and terrifying, like the way that transcendence is always paired with terror, you know?
Yeah.
And those moments and just the, I think I've had an understanding in the last 3 years also, like there are kind of, ecstatic moments like that. But I think I've had an understanding of ego dissolution in steady work now. Mm. You know, the way that if the connection between ego dissolution and like finding an ethical path, if that's what we're talking about here, I think I've located it much more in the last few years in, let's say, the labor of caregiving or just like certain forms of community labor. And I would say actually overarchingly the labor of caregiving and just me, I've been trying to learn how I want to apply that in more areas of my life and to borrow the abilities that child rearing teaches you, just of kind of a daily quiet submission to these acts of care and to the well-being of another person. I think I found those two things connecting in those acts. One thing that I found sad about having a kid is that my natural ecstatic inclinations, I used to spike really high all the time.
Yeah.
And I don't really anymore. It's more like, it's like that impulse gets trickled out a million times a day in tiny ways. And so I no longer have these big reserves that I'll just be like walking around in New York City and just feel like overcome with a sense of transcendence. Like I don't have that anymore. It feels like I'm meeting it out every day on my children. And that honestly feels like one of the biggest, most fundamental changes to my life since having a kid. I mean, I can still access those emotions, certainly, but they don't come as often and as intensely. And, you know, it's partly just getting older and like not having hours to just walk around at golden hour, you know, like you're just, those are the peak indoor chaos hours in my home now.
Does that feel like a grief to you or just a change?
I feel like a little bit of grief about it, but I also think it feels right. Like it also feels entirely correct to this stage of life, which I think I've something that I've been telling myself in this, you know, I'm like deep in it right now. I have an 8-9 week old and a 3-year-old. And I've been reminding myself that 3 years from now, this will be an entirely different phase. Like, I think that I have more shifts in the way these issues manifest to me as time goes on. I think like death will come to play a larger part in it as time goes on. Yep. And I think, you know, my sense of independent experience certainly will shift again, hopefully shift dramatically in the next 10 years so that I'll start having more of them. Now, it's like there's just
short supply. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Just to be really basic about it, you see a spiritual component of parenting.
Yeah. The primary way that I think about, you know, the biggest sweep of all the stuff that we're talking about, let's be real, like it's still drugs. It's still like, you know, like last summer I was done breastfeeding. You know, I went to Montana with one of my best friends for 3 days and we went hiking and then we did acid. And she's a like born and bred downtown New York girl and, you know, staunch atheist. And she had this moment, you know, it was overpoweringly beautiful. And also we were on acid. And she was like, how is it that we're alive at the same time as each other and as all this beauty? And like, she was like, I feel so scared and I feel so grateful. And I feel we're both starting to cry. And I was like, girl, this is why people believe in God, you know, like,
totally.
Like this is like, I'm reminded in those moments that now what I understand as the closest analog to God is the fact that the laws of physics and biology create a world that begets life, you know, human and non-human. And then I understand the framework of the devil as the, you know, as the competing forces of entropy. Like I basically, like at some point in college, I was like, okay, this thing that I understood as God, creation and destruction, is basically just whatever laws of physics are knitting this world together.
Right.
And I locate some sense of that spiritual wonder in the fact that, you know, like I'm really into Fermi's paradox, like us, you know, the fact that there's definitely extraterrestrial life mathematically, but how come we haven't found it yet? I mean, like if I were to try to make an argument for myself that God exists, like that probably would be one of them, that we are the only known consciousness in the universe to us.
And how could that be so?
how could that be so? Right. If I still believed in God, I would just say, well, because God made us and that is what makes this world. But, and you know, that there's like a, there's a shimmer of the divine around, you know, just the fact of our existence to me. And so in that way, my understanding of spirituality has, you know, like bloomed to an inhuman scale. And then it has shrunk to, yeah, there's the labor of taking care of a brand new life and the small moments of mystery and the unknown and also fear and also desperation that that experience brings you.
I have so enjoyed our conversation. I really, really appreciate you doing it.
Me too.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I think this series is so lovely. It's like, these are the things that like you never just sit down and talk about.
Gia Tolentino is a staff writer for The New Yorker.